Today, I'm Bowen Shi from the Ohio State University, and it's a pleasure to be here. And this is my first time to visit the perimeter. And I'm especially thankful for Benny for inviting me here. And this topic is the information complex in topological orders. I'll explain what it means. So this is the outline of the talk. This talk is based on the two works. This one, my joint work with my advisor Yanming Lu, and the second one is my recent archive. So first, I'll give you some background and motivation of our work. First is a brief review of topological orders, and then I'll tell you what is an information complex, what we propose as a characterization of topological orders. And then I will give you a concrete example of information complex in quantum double models with gapped boundaries. And I'll tell you how the information complex can characterize the topological excitations, both those excitations, those anions in the bulk, and also for the deconfined boundary excitations. And the second half of the talk, I'll tell you some quantum informational constraint, which can be seen from the information complex. After giving you some general pictures, I'll tell you about a new derivation of topological entanglement. The same method also gives us constraint of fusions. Okay, so 2D topological orders are some 2D gapped phase. The correlation length is finite, and the model is gapped. So the ground state is actually quite interesting. It's a long-range entangled in the sense that it's very far away from a product state. You need to do a very long depth quantum circuit in order to get the ground state. And there's topological degeneracy if you put the system on closed manifold, like the sphere, torus, and so on. You get degeneracy which just depends on the topology. In a sphere, you get unique ground state. And this one, you get more than one. And these ground states are locally indistinguishable. They look almost exactly the same when you look at a disk, a local region. But globally, they are different. That's why you can stay, this quantum state can store quantum information. And this is also the reason that quantum information can be stored in a way that robust from decoherence. So for the excitations, we have anions in the bulk A and A bar. They are known to have non-trivial breeding statistics. And there are topological excitations in the sense that they couldn't be created locally. We need some string operator to create them. And anion types are sometimes called super selection sectors. And we will use both terminology. And this one is a kind of more generalized, but also use this terminology for boundaries. Okay, so far it's for the bulk. Now, but physically, system usually have some boundaries on it. So how about the boundary of a topological order? There are models which only have gapless boundary, like the fractional quantum Hall state and Asian anions in bosonic system. You couldn't gap out the boundary. They are gapless. But there are other models called non-chiral topological order. In these models, you can actually construct a gapped boundary. So it's quite different. And the simplest case is the Torrey code model. This boundary is kind of known for a long time. There's a quantum double model. It's kind of recently people constructed the gapped boundaries for the same gapped phase in the bulk. Actually, usually you have more than one gapped boundaries. So you can talk about the phase transition on the boundary without closing the gap in the bulk. So you can go from, let's say, the E boundary of Torrey code to the M boundary. Yeah, you can do that. So for the gapped boundaries, actually, There's some alpha and beta showing here. These are also some topological excitation which could not be created locally. You need some string operator to create them. And let's call them alpha and beta. They are in general non-abelian model, they are quite different from the Bok anions. So the types are different. I'll explain it better later. Also, there is actually a related thing, which is a confined excitation inside the gap boundary described in this paper. We find that the fusion rule actually apply to this deconfined excitation also, but their physical contexts are different from our physical context. Okay, so now I'll tell you a little bit more about the theory behind the anions. So I'll tell you something about the fusion, because this is the thing that we actually characterize using information convex. So anion A and B can fuse into C, like what happens in this picture. A and B come close to each other. And if you observe at a far away distance, you couldn't distinguish them. It looks like some anion C. This is a fusion. NABC is called the fusion multiplicity. And from this NABC, you can actually define what people call the quantum dimensions. This is for the bulk. The same thing you can do it on a boundary. Actually, the fusion of boundary excitations also correspond to some fusion category. But there's certain differences. Like in the bulk, you have the freedom to switch A and B. So NABC is actually symmetric in the exchange of A and B. But for alpha and beta on a gap boundary, there's no such space to exchange them. So actually, in a generic theory, alpha and beta, they don't have symmetry by switching them. Yeah, but still, you can define the quantum dimension. And there is a related phenomenon called Bok to boundary condensation. Well, I should mention that there's something people call a condensation a long time ago, which is that the fact that some anion types can disappear when you put it onto the boundary. Yeah, but this one is kind of a generalization to that. We allow the A, in addition to the possibility to condense into the vacuum, we allow it to be condensed into any beta like this. You push it onto the boundary, it becomes beta. And usually it's a kind of several different possible outcomes. So this is what it tells.
Excuse me. Yeah. You said that the fusion rule is that A cross B is something.
Mm-hmm.
Is it easy to see that the quantum dimensions also satisfy that equation? Is it obvious?
It's a good question. Actually, it's highly non-trivial, actually. Because first of all, NABC is some non-negative integers. It can be 0, 1, 2, 3. But actually, it satisfies many stronger conditions to be this, to be fusion coefficient.
So it can be derived,
I think. Yeah, in that case, you can actually uniquely define the quantum dimension by the unique positive solution of this equation. There exists such a solution and it is unique. It's actually a highly non-trivial statement. Any more questions? Yeah.
What's the relation between boundary fusion matrix and bulk fusion matrix, namely the N alpha beta gamma and N ABC?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. Indeed, there are some relations. Actually, we will see that the quantum dimension, the total quantum dimension in the bulk, and the total quantum dimension in the boundary, there's a constraint between them. But these are some kind of non-trivial results. There are relations, but not very direct, easy to explain.
So those boundary topological excitations, they cannot move into the bulk, right?
Actually, that's a good question. I will explain it in a few slides. There's actually a very interesting phenomenon. for non-abelian models related to that? Yes, so please wait for a few slides. That's a very good question. Any more? All right. So, right, so we have this fusion and a related phenomenon, bulk-to-bulk condensation. We want to, yeah, characterize.
I follow. So the alpha, beta, they are all deconfined excitation of the boundary, or do you also count the confined?
In my case, these excitations are all deconfined.
Yeah, so no line tension.
Right. So the strings, the string operator is needed to create the excitations, but they do not cause energy, right? They're deconfined. And so there's some rich phenomena behind this fusion. We want to see whether we can extract that thing from a subsystem. So this is a part of our motivation to look at the subsystem. Can we see something about the excitations and fusion from the subsystem? We find that, right. So yes, by looking at the subsystem, we can answer several questions about the bulk and the boundary of the topological order, and like characterize the super selection sectors, fusion and condensation rules, and also the topological entanglement. And yeah, so the idea is to look at the subsystem in its lowest energy. The blue region, there's no excitation, but you can see something from looking at the subsystem. A natural thing to study is the set of reduced-density matrices. So before I really introduce you to the information convex, which will appear in a few pages, I just tell you, well, maybe to give you some more motivation to look at this, maybe some of these questions will be interested in some of you, so you get more motivation. So you may ask, is there anything special or about our method? Because there are already several ways to extract information from a ground state or something, right? Like the total quantum dimension can be extracted from looking at a unique ground state. Like from the topological entanglement entropy, you can see the total quantum dimension, and ST matrices can be extracted if you look at a bunch of other ground states on the torus. So is there something more we can see in our method? So, well, so yeah. So first of all, this method actually naturally characterizes the bulk and the boundary in the same way. So you can use it in this case. And actually, this is only for the gap boundary, I should say, not for the gapless boundary, which has the correlation length is infinite, right? It's very different. And another thing is, right, answer the following question. So what quantum information we can get from a subsystem? This is actually a quite natural question for quantum error correction code. Right, so imagine that I have a topological order system, and we can store some quantum information in it. And now I want to send the system to you so that you can receive the quantum information. Then suppose that you just receive the subsystem instead of the whole system. Can you still get the information? Or maybe you can just get part of the information, or maybe you get nothing. So what's exactly the information you get from a subsystem? Our method is actually quite natural in answering such questions. And yeah, finally, this information convex will help us to borrow some quantum information result that we can actually derive some constraint. We can derive some known results from a new perspective. And also this suggests some new generalization, which actually works for 3D and higher. And we believe that there's a certain new result is easier to be obtained using our method than maybe other methods available so far. So yeah, this is some of the motivation we can look into. Okay. So this page is to lay down some basics about convex set and density matrices before I really define information convex. So density matrix, which can be for the whole system in the mixed state, or maybe for the subsystem, a reduced density matrix for a subsystem, they satisfy the following conditions. First of all, it's a Hermitian operator. And second, it's a positive definite. For any mu, it's always greater or equal to zero. And it's normalized, a trace rho equal to, trace sigma equal to one. And the convex set is the following. So geometrically, it's a set of points in which straight lines can be defined. So if x and y are in the set, then if the length segment connecting x and y is in the set, then the set is called convex. So this is an example of non-convex set. And there's a concept which is very useful in our discussion, which is extremal points. Extremal points are those points not lying in the middle of any length segment. So here are a few examples which I try to convince you that convex sets actually appear quite naturally when you consider a set of density matrices. So the first example is just one qubit, the one qubit two-dimensional Hilbert space. And you consider all the density matrices on one qubit is actually from a convex set, which is actually quite well known. It's a block sphere with the interior. On the sphere is the pure states, and the pure states are the extremal points. When you get inside the ball, you get a mixed state, and the mixed state can be represented as a linear combination of the extremal points on the surface of the sphere.
I didn't understand.
Yeah.
Why would you say that the points on the surface are not, cannot be midpoint of anything? Can I not draw a segment that is lying on the surface and then?
Because when you draw a line segment, you can imagine this ball is in a three-dimensional Euclidean space, embedded in the 3D Euclidean space. So you are, if you draw a straight line, it will be a straight line in 3D Euclidean space. It's not
this is a straight line. These lines segments are straight line segments.
Yes.
And it has to be in Euclidean space, not any segments, any curves that I can draw.
Right, right. It's not a geodesic on the surface of the sphere.
Oh. So how do I know which space I'm embedding my space in? It's not defined there.
Yeah. Actually, there is for distance matrices, there is a natural way to do that because there are matrices, you can add them up. That's the basis we chose. Like this one, you're adding two distance matrices.
So here, how do I define distance or how do I define line segments here?
Yeah, you just do a linear combination, or actually convex combination with some probability, like this one, p times some density matrix time, plus 1 minus p times another density matrix. That's how we define a line segment. The p is from 0 to 1. When p equal to 0, you get one end of the line segment. And when it goes from 0 to 1, you actually get all the points in the middle.
So as in every point, every density matrix is a point in space?
Yes.
And it's implicitly always a flat space because I cannot imagine how to do curved space.
Yeah, exactly. This is always a convex subset of a Euclidean space, and it is naturally defined because we have the multiplication and addition of matrices. More questions? No. Okay, so the second example is a classical superposition. If you get zero and one state, instead of two coherent superposition, you can do the following. Right, this is the classical superposition. And the third example is actually also very interesting and actually will be useful in the second half of my talk. So you can consider a system which you divide it into ABC, and you consider all the density matrices on ABC, which have the same reduced density matrix on AB, which I call rho AB, some density matrix on AB. And
it means that if I take a system and take some two arbitrary density matrices, mm-hmm. and look at the sum, it need not be a density matrix.
If you take the sum of two density matrices,
some arbitrary.
Right, it is not because it does not satisfy condition three. Right, so you do need to normalize a little bit, which turns out to be a convex combination.
So is this related to this, people talk about positive definite map?
Well,
it's something called completely positive maps.
Yeah, that can be some relation. Right. Okay. Yeah, any questions about this page? If not, now I can tell you the definition. So because we are looking at topological orders, and I told you that I want to look at a subsystem which contains no excitation. So this is what we do. We take a subsystem omega, which can be any topology. It does not have to be a disk. So it can be anything, and we consider all the density matrices from states with no excitation on omega. I draw a lot of excitation on the manifold. Here is a disk. The red dots in the book and the purple dots on the boundary, but these disks are away from omega. They are not on omega. We take such a quantum state phi, and then we can calculate is reduced density matrix. This one will be in the information convex. From our definition, the information convex is a set of reduced density matrices from all possible quantum states of this type. So sigma omega is the information convex. It is actually kind of straightforward to show that this is a convex set. But what we are really interested to answer is the structure. What is the structure of the set of reduced density matrices? And does it help to characterize the phase?
Sorry, you have to prove that all possible density matrices on omega forms a convex set, is that the point?
Right.
And it has to be that there's no excitations in there, mm-hmm. such that it is a convex set.
Actually, here I have been a little bit inaccurate. In our definition, we allow both pure state and mixed state to start with.
Mixed states, then you would have to allow something to some excitations in omega.
There are things you can mix with. You can do a classical superposition of two pure states, and both of the pure states have no excitation on omega. Right.
May not be an important point, but suppose I have a finite but non-zero correlation method. Is this notion of no excitation in the region omega clearly defined? Do I get some ambiguity near the boundary?
That's a great question. So in that case, there's something you need to worry about. There's a few ways to fix the problem. First, you can require that the excitation to be a few correlation lengths away. Right? That's one way to do it. There's alternative ways to do that, is that you require the density matrices to be the same as a ground state from several correlation lengths for omega. Right?
So even with those restrictions, you can still prove what is.
Right. But in that case, actually sigma omega will be kind of higher dimension, but they stretch out in other dimensions just a little bit. If you calculate the fidelity, it's actually quite close to a low dimensional thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, the next I'll tell you some structure that we calculated in the quantum double model. So let me introduce the model first. So quantum double model is a class of 2D lattice model, which actually can be exactly solvable. And for each quantum double, we just need one input, which is a finite group G. For example, it can be Z2 and S3, a non-abelian group. And if you want to discuss depth boundaries, then I can tell you that for each K, a subgroup of G, we can define a depth boundary. There are more depth boundaries, but these are some examples. And okay, so the Z2 quantum double is actually very familiar as the Torrey code model. With a four excitation, 1, E, M, and F. Sorry, this is a typo. And there's four Bokeh excitations. And for the boundary, you have two super selection sectors. They are, both of them are abelian. And for S3 quantum double model, there's a, this is the, actually the simplest non-abelian non-abelian topological order in the quantum double model. In this case, you get eight excitations in the bulk. And you can see from the quantum dimension that some of them are actually non-abelian. Every time you have quantum dimension bigger than one, it is a non-abelian anneal. But you get six boundary excitations in this case. And the way we calculate this model is the following. So we start from the lattice. Because the model is defined using group theory, we can just use technique related to finite group to calculate. The basic idea is you take any topology, it can be involve many sides, but you can map it into a simpler lattice by involving only much fewer links and find the set of possible tensor matrices satisfy a field requirement. And actually, in this way, we can reliably find the tensor matrices that we want. So the calculations using finite group and the representation theory, and we converted the result to category theory by compare to other references. Actually, I compared to this reference because they have some very useful results for quantum double models. But I should mention that our physical context is different. We are discussing deconfined excitation, but their result is for confined excitation inside the boundary. So actually, we show that the formulas of fusion rules actually apply to the deconfined excitation in quantum double model. Okay, so now I can explain the results. So for small omega 1, the disk in the box, actually you can see no interesting structures. The set of density matrices minimize energy is just a unique choice. For this capital omega 1 annulus, you get this structure with multiple extremal points. And first we calculated this set, we know that there are finite extremal points, looks like this. And we also verify that each extremal point actually corresponds to some anions. There's an anion string going through this annulus. This is a way to prepare the extremal points. And further, we can discuss the topological invariant structures, A and B. If you take two extremal points, actually you get sort of an orthogonal relation. And if you calculate the entanglement entropy for two extremal points, you get this actually famous log dA contribution to the topological entanglement. Yeah, these are known in this paper. And right. Now let's look in some examples for the Torrey code model. Oh, by the way, here we have da 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 because there's a can be more anion types. So this is just a pictorial representation, which not quite accurate. If you have more anion types, it's a higher dimensional convex set. But for the Torrey Code model, it is indeed there's a four anion types, and the sigma omega one information convex is exactly looks like this. There's four extremal points, right? For example, if you have M string, then you prepare these extremal points. For the S3 quantum double model, looks like this. Because there are eight anion types, so this is actually a seven-dimensional convex set. I couldn't draw in 2D, so this is just a projection. And okay, so right now it's for the book. Yeah, question.
Another question. So maybe I missed it. So how do you know that you should pick this annulus as a shape? Why don't you pick like a donut, like you know, like an eight type shape?
Right. You can do that actually. It's an interesting question. I mean, donut shape means there's a.
I mean, like a mm-hmm. figure eight.
Right. Yeah, actually, I will discuss that in the second half of my talk. It is a quite interesting thing. It's actually encode the NABC, Boolean multiplicity, the integers. It's actually an important example, but I just start from simpler ones.
In the reference, you had Rob Lay.
Which one?
He is visiting Princeton. I mean, perimeter. He is here. Just for your information, the third author,
who?
Rob Lay from Urbana-Champaign. He is here at perimeter these days.
Oh, I
spending
see.
It here.
Thank you. Okay. So far is for the book, and we can do the same thing for gap boundary and see what we can see from the subsystem. From this omega 2, actually, it's trivial that we get that just a unique point. For this capital omega 2, we also find a bunch of extremal points. They are isolated extremal points. And again, it turns out that they satisfy this orthogonal relation. And there is a piece of topological entanglement, which turns out to be the quantum dimension for the boundary excitations. Yeah. So it's sort of a generalization to the Bok result. And right. So we can, again, go to some examples. For the Torrey Code model, there's just two boundary super selection sectors. One is the vacuum. Another, we can actually call it M. Because in this example, the M is actually this extremal point, you can create using a string along the boundary, but also you can do it in the bulk. So there's a sort of no real things happen on the boundary because every extremal point can be prepared using bulk process. So then you may ask, why should we call it boundary super selection sector? Is it just something happens in the bulk which costs could explain this structure. Actually, it turns out that in non-abelian models, there's some intrinsic different thing happen. From non-abelian models, we can calculate. First, we did the calculation that this structure has six extremal points for this S3 quantum double model. And we also check that each extremal points we can obtain using some boundary string, so some process happens along the boundary. And now a natural question is, how about I prepare a pair of anions in the bulk, which the string goes across omega 2? Does it prepare all the points on the set? It turns out that the answer is no. You couldn't prepare the extremal points. So from this, you just prepare a subset. So actually, you can prove that any process happens in the bulk. Any string operator you apply in the bulk without touching the boundary, actually, you couldn't prepare any of the extremal points other than the identity. So in this case, we do need to think about the boundary super selection sectors. Yeah, so any questions?
Is this really because the boundary, none of the boundary super selection sector is a direct descendant of the bulk?
Yeah.
If I do it with the tutorial code, yes.
Yes, so kind of abelian models are simpler. Yeah, boundary excitation, a kind of a subset of a bulk excitation identified, so that you can have sort of a subset of bulk excitation, but not abelian ones, they are different. Yeah, and more interesting. Okay, so now I can tell you something about condensing. So you can push anion A onto the boundary. It becomes beta, or maybe a superposition of beta. So can we see the condensation process by looking at the subsystem? The answer is actually, by looking at this picture I showed you in the last page, you can actually figure out all the fusion coefficients, meaning the NA beta. We can figure out all the coefficients by looking at such figures. For example, this one is showing here. If A is the Ka particle here, then we can calculate the result is the following. And compare this equation with this formula, we find all the multiplicities showing here. In the same way, we can show that the two, if the multiplicity is bigger than one, we can also see it from this figure. But yeah, let's forget about the picture in the last page and think maybe there is a different way, because these two factors are actually quite interesting. It actually tells you some coherence. Because of the factor two, we can actually there will be a two-dimensional protected Hilbert space, which you can encode quantum information. So an interesting question is whether you can see the coherence in a subsystem. So let's try again using some other subsystem. I will pick omega 3, and annulus covers the gap boundary. It turns out that in this subsystem, we can see the coherence like this. So the GW here, because it has a factor two here, it actually contains some coherent, which can be seen in omega 3. And actually, this is a piece of quantum information. You can only see from one subsystem. If you can see from omega 3, you couldn't see it in the book.
Yeah. I didn't understand what you mean by seeing coherence in this case. What exactly was seen?
What exactly was
so, sorry, so what was what has that to do with computing or the information complex of omega 3? What was the relation with that number?
Yeah. So yeah. The relation is the following. So if all the coefficients are equal to one, you will only observe isolated extremal points. Yeah, but here if you have two, actually you find that omega 3, there is a continuous parameterized extremal points. That one.
Continuously parameterized.
Yeah. It's just looking like a block sphere. Yeah, the block sphere.
So you mean, so you represented by this cone, a double cone, and this whole cone is describing that.
It actually describes every particle that can condense into the vacuum sector on the boundary. So there are three anions which can condense into the vacuum sector. One here. So this extremal points correspond to the vacuum That
gives rise to a two-dimensional itself corresponds to a circle or something.
Yeah, actually it's a sphere. This is a projection, so it looks like a circle. Right, so it actually sees the coherence in omega 3. So now it is actually interesting to ask whether such structures can be observed in experiments. And there is a related experiment, so I will be glad to mention it. It's actually a quite recent experiment, and it's done in collateral experiment. But they are actually right now they can just do very small size within 10 atoms, maybe for each subsystem. And right now they can do 1D. But you see that the experiments are quite recent. Maybe there can be improvement in the next 10 years or so. And we hope that they can measure such things. And what they did is the following. They have interference, and they can measure trace rho 1, rho 2 for any subsystem. So imagine you can create two copies of the state. Then you can do the interference. So if you prepare one extremal point in one copy of the system, another extremal point in another copy of the system, then you can do interference. Then these are the results. And you may also be able to observe the theta phi dependence. But yeah,
Sorry, one second. I mean, the first author, Islam, is a new faculty in IQC.
I see.
At Waterloo.
Oh, it's near.
Sorry, permission.
Right, thank you. Right. Oh, right. I actually went to his talk at our winter school.
Oh, it's here.
Right. Okay, so here is the second half of my talk. So the first part is basically we start from a concrete model and then we calculate and we find out the structure. So when we obtain the result, we want to think slightly deeper and see what it really tells us. And certainly, there's a lot of subsystems you can choose. Right? There certainly should be some relation between them. This information in different subsystems, they are not totally independent. There are relations. So we try to figure out a way to relate them. So can we derive some of the structure using a subset of what we know from our calculation? Right? So I'm going to tell you some quantum information constraints, which actually tells us a few things, like a new derivation of topological entanglement, constraint fusion, and condensation rules. Yeah, they are follows from quantum information consistency. And this idea actually can be generalized to 3D and higher. And right. I'm inspired by these two works. And to motivate, I want to ask the following questions. What can we see from the following subsystem? Suppose we know the information convex. So you see this is the simplest one, the disk. This is an annulus. This is the figure eight, is it? Right, it is important. So there are a few answers people may give. So the simplest answer is we see nothing from this omega 1. This omega, capital omega 1, we can see the anion types. And omega 4, actually this is quite similar to the omega 3 I showed you. You can actually see some coherence. So actually you can see the anion fusion, like the quite parallel to the condensation rules. And a more detailed answer is the following. Small omega 1, you can actually find something because you can calculate the ground state topological entanglement entropy. It actually tells you the total quantum dimension. It is better than say, you can see nothing, right? This is a better answer kind of. And from capital omega 1, you can see the superselection sectors, the alien types. And you can also figure out the quantum dimension by calculating the entanglement entropies. And this one, the NABC, the multiplicity is actually coherently encoded. So yeah, whenever you have this number greater than 1, there's some coherence represented by this sphere. And right. And there are a few more answers. If you are really interested in quantum information, then you probably thought about this. This should be what's interesting for you, that what type of information you can see. So omega 1 is classical. Actually, you always see classical information which can be copied. You can try to divide omega 1 into two annulus with the same center. Actually, from each of the smaller pieces, you can actually recover the same information. So it's classical. You can find it in different places. And this one, on omega 4, whenever you have an ABC greater than 1, actually there's a coherence, which is a sort of a piece of quantum information. You can never copy it. You can see it at most in one subsystem. People could not decode the same information in two different subsystems. And right. So yeah, after that question, now I can introduce what I'm trying to do. So we see that in omega 4, there's more information you can see, and this one, you can see less information. From category theory, it's kind of obvious that from NAPC, you can derive this. So NAPC contains more information than the quantum dimension. And the quantum dimension of each annual, from this, you can derive the total quantum dimension. So definitely, this one contains less information. But now let me go to the next thing. Looks quite similar, but this one is a kind of more involved questions. So from the fact that NAPC is encoded in the information convex of capital omega 4, can we actually really derive from some quantum information constraints that we have to have the log DA contribution on the annulus? There's a piece of topological entanglement. Maybe we can derive it, right? Instead of saying that, oh, we calculate and find such result, maybe we can derive it. And from this, we may be able to derive the log total quantum dimension by just looking at the information convex and doing some quantum information. Can we derive? Yeah. My answer is yes, we can. And right, in 2D, it's a new perspective to recover some known result. But we think it's actually will tell us something interesting in 3D and higher. Yeah.
Is it enough just to look at two punctures? If I have more puncture, I mean more inner holes, does
yeah.
it give you any more information, or it's, you stop at two?
Right, that's a great question. I have thought of this question for some time, and now we believe that we can actually, for higher genus or a subsystem with more holes, we can actually glue such a subsystem to find a more complicated one. So we can actually stop here. So this is the basic thing.
But somehow you can't glue two different omega ones and get omega 4.
Yeah, actually, in two, after two, one or two slides, I'll show you how I glue it.
Oh.
Yeah, and actually, it gives you some information, but not all information about omega 4. Yeah, so, right. I want to show you one derivation. This is perhaps the only derivation I show in this talk. I want to show you how to derive the log DA from looking at the logic that I presented in the last slide. In this paper, what I did was to do some derivation using a few concretely stated assumptions. And I also use this highly non-trivial but very, very useful results called strong subadditivity of von Neumann entropy. So I just want to give you a sketch. This is not a full proof, the full proof. So basically what I did was do the following. So I start with omega 1. Assuming that I do not know what the number is. And I want to show that we have, this is the only consistent answer. If so, it's a different value, it won't consistent with the strong subadditivity. So the picture is the following. We start with omega 4. And we consider the state with the anion A and B topological charge in the two holes. And and we split into a subsystem. This is what we can see. And from the argument I just gave, so this subsystem, we can see more information. And from the smaller ones, we could, observers in A, B, and B, C, they can try to figure out what the state on A, B, C was. But actually, they get different choices. There are multiple quantum states in the information complex of omega 4. It has the same reduced density matrix on A, B, and B, C. So they could not tell you everything. So, but they can tell you something. So actually, they can correctly predict the maximal entangled element in sigma omega 4 with topological charge A and B. So they will tell you that entanglement entropy has a contribution bigger than the, different from the ground state with the trivial charge inside the hole by 2FA plus 2FB. But the person who can see omega 4, they will tell you the following answer. So for each extremal points, there are the three contributions, A, B, C, suppose A and B fills into C. And we can do a superposition to get a more entangled state by doing a mixture of different extremal points. They will tell you the maximal entangled one in the, will be have the following contribution of entanglement. If you compare the two results, you find that find this equation, which actually tells you that FA is log DA, that's the only solution. This is the main picture of my derivation. Okay, so actually follow from the same logic, we can do a few other things, like to recover this one by break an annulus into pieces, into trivial subsystems. We can use that way to recover the ground state of logical entanglement entropy. And we apply this method to a gap boundary. We get log d alpha for each boundary excitations. And there are a few fusion constraints derived in the same way. So these three equations, I'll tell you some common feature of this. So you see the first equation, the left-hand side is about Fock quantum dimension. This is says something about the boundary. So they are related. So you can use that method to derive some relations looks like this one. And the second one, I saw someone ask the question about relating the bulk and the boundary, right? So this is the total quantum dimension for bulk excitations. On the right-hand side is the total quantum dimension for the boundary excitations. So the square, kind of there is a relation. Yeah, the next thing about the derivations, we give a different perspective, derive the result in a different viewpoint. And but up to now, I should say this formula is known for a long time. And for the result for the gap boundaries, like these ones, they are known quite recent, but they are sort of known in the literature. So can we produce some new results? So here's our ongoing research project. So one is to can we start from simpler assumptions? Right. We think that we can, or hope that we can start from very simple assumptions like area law in local regions, and we can deduce, oh, it's to highly constrained the possible structure of information convex. Hopefully, we can get to a point that we can predict a lot of things from this simple set of assumptions. And we have made some progress recently. And the second one is to apply this method to 3D. And that will tell you some formula, maybe it looks like these ones. Some of them may not be known right now by other methods, but we have a way so we can try to use our method to, yeah, to give some answer to the open questions. Yeah, 3D. Yeah, we can say something about 3D topological entanglement and fusion rules. So okay, so this is a summary and the outlook of my talk. Thanks for your attention. Yeah.
Is it possible to say from this entanglement point of view to say anything about braiding?
Oh, we can't say anything about braiding yet.
Right.
Yeah. Right, so yes, it's a good question. Right now, of course, there are the two possibilities. One is this method is, it's not that useful in characterized braiding. Another possibility is there is a way, but we don't know it yet. Hey.
You considered that this called the boundary. Did you consider that the boundary is of one type, or does this matter if you have like multiple types of boundary?
Are you saying that you have multiple boundaries?
So for instance, if you consider the Turek code,
mm-hmm.
it could be the E-type boundary
right.
and the E-M-type boundary. So, you know, if those meet and your shape encircles this meeting point, this could also affect the value you get, right?
Are you considering a system with two-type boundaries?
Yeah.
So this is the E boundary, another is the M boundary.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. So for simplicity, In this work, we just considered one boundary type. So that one was not included in our work. Yeah, actually, yeah, I think people has tried more than one type boundary and try to calculate something in that context. And yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't think, I think there are still things we haven't tried in that case.
This meeting point of two types of boundaries can be thought of as also some sort of some sort of an anion as well.
Yeah, you can consider a subsystem actually touch both of the boundary. That will be an interesting question.
Okay, well, yeah, let's thank Bowen again.